Hello, everybody. I'm David Frangioni, and welcome to this week's Modern Drummer Podcast. How great is this? So this is Narda Michael Walden's first of many Narda Michael Walden's Upbeat. His guest this week is none other than Will Calhoun. So without further hesitation, here's Narda.
How are you, Will?
Life is beautiful, Narda. Beautiful, man, under the circumstances. I'm gonna change this around so I can get a better...
Yes.
You know, considering the circumstances, man, everything is good. You know, we gotta recreate the wheel.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so it's a little shuffling of the deck.
Yes.
And doing some things from home, and you know, I'm starting to get some calls to play out in venues without an audience. So we're doing some streaming. The Blue Note call. I'm gonna do the Blue Note at the end of the month with no audience.
Oh,
it's gonna be international streaming.
Okay.
So
okay.
You know, I'll take it now at this point, man.
I know, brother. That's right. I want you to know you're the first guest on my show called Upbeat.
Wow. Well,
this thank show
you.
Is called Upbeat, and you're my first guest ever.
Well, thank you so much, man. I appreciate that. That's a beautiful thing.
The reason I want you to be my first guest, I'm so happy you are my first guest. I love your energy. When I see you play, you bring the spirit of music that I love, which is hard-hitting and sensitive at the same time. You're extremely powerful, yet you're also extremely sensitive. That combination is my favorite. And I'm so happy that you said yes to come today on the show and just let us know your philosophy about life and what inspires you. So anything you want to say, I want to open the floor to you.
Oh, well, thank you, man.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing now for you to say that. And I want to say thank you.
Yeah.
I think drumming is life in many ways. And it's very important to be tough. And it's very important to be sensitive because it's difficult to understand the true definitions of both of those worlds unless you can really exist in both.
That's right.
You know, that's really, really important.
That's right.
I think my community, now that I've been really blessed, grew up in the Northeast Bronx, very lovely community. As you know, great musicians. Raymond Chute lived around the corner, his backyard faced my backyard.
Love Raymond. Steve
Jordan lived around the corner from me, great drummer.
Yeah.
The drummer who started hip hop, Errol Pumpkin Bedwood, live a few blocks away. So I was really fortunate between my neighbors. There was a man named Mr. Palumba. He came straight here from Italy, it opened the first music school in the Northeast Bronx. It's still there on Gun Hill Road today, Palumba Music. So we had actually music school, but all of our parents believed in the arts and education. So the beautiful community, Jewish summer camps, the clubs that we hung out in to play, all of those other people's parents that chipped in, having friends from the Caribbean and South America. So when I visited my friend's dad would say, Will, you got to listen to Cachao. You got to listen to Tito Puente live, 1956.
Yeah.
You know, all of this beautiful experience. And I was around tough guys.
I know.
And the tough guys respected me because I was a great athlete, but they more respected me because I didn't do the drug thing. I didn't do the hanging out kind of a thing. But I was into the knowledge of the street. It drove my mom crazy.
Right.
Because I felt like hustlers were just as fascinating to me as jazz musicians.
Right.
In many ways.
Right.
So, and hustlers gave you the most direct, real knowledge about life. They would sit you down and say, don't do what I'm doing. This is what happens. Mm-hmm. This is what crime will get you. They did it.
Right. Yeah.
They told me, Will, you can't do this. This is not for you. It's not your game. My job is to educate you with this information. But I would rather any day now to sit down and talk to one of those guys if I had a problem with my life or my personal life or my finances or my family, because those what I loved about those guys is they never ever BS'd you ever.
Yeah,
you can only count on raw information. So between all of the beauty, you know, a little bit of the edginess, now that I had to choose my cards, you know, I had to pull the right cards out of the deck and say, this is what can I take from the Jewish summer camps? What can I take from Mr. Palumba's music school?
Right.
What can I take from having Steve Jordan and Ray Chu live in my neighborhood? You know, and what can I take from the guys that were out hustling to get the best bits of those camps to invest in that energy for myself.
Yeah.
So I can share the positive sides of those choices with other people.
Right. What is it, Will, that makes New York such a great place for music? What is it about New York and the water and the air and the energy of the people that makes you such a great musician?
Man, it's just so now you can't avoid other people and other cultures and other sounds and other smells and other food. You can try to. They have 4 or 6 block radius if you want to kind of be your own person, but you can't avoid it when you event, when you go to see somebody in a club, and they could be from France, they could be from Harlem. And the thing that's fascinating about New York is with all of our boroughs, and you hear us joke about each other in songs, it's almost minor cultures. You know, being from the Bronx, I can look at a guy from Harlem from 20 blocks away and say, that guy's from Harlem. Mm-hmm. It's his walk.
Okay.
It's the way he talks. And Harlem cats don't dress like Bronx.
Okay.
That.
Okay.
Right. Bronx cats don't dress like Bronx. We go to clubs and we go out. We can look in Queens for a while, so I know you can. It's one of those things where what makes it so hip is it is a real, real, real community. It's a real mixture, for real. Yes, yes, there's segregation. Yes, you deal with racism. Yes, you deal with alienation. But for the most part, now that you can't get on a train and take a train a couple of stops in Manhattan without rubbing into somebody maybe you're not familiar with or hear a foreign language. And when you grow up around this, the wall comes down between you're catering with people because you're accustomed, whether you like it or not, you're accustomed to the different energies, the different tempos, different sounds. And then they have these little small communities too that just do salsa.
Right.
Just do the Mexican mariachi.
Mm-hmm.
Just do jazz. Mm-hmm. Just do hip hop. So you have these little, if you want just a hardcore, you want the hamburger without any bread,
mm-hmm.
if you go to those locations and you just get it that way, you know?
Yeah.
So that's the idea, man, of having it that
Jim.
And it's like that with everything. Now it's like that with sports, it's like that if you're a professor, anything. It's all you know, it's all good all the way around. But I think that's what makes New York special. And then now when somebody's burning and somebody's new, or there's a new hot form of music, you know, there's whatever you hear about, like, okay, there's a new killing guitar player in town. Within 24 hours, you can have access to that cat.
Wow,
there's a new cat from Japan, a trumpet player, man, he's killing.
Yeah.
And within 48 hours, if you don't get his name and his number, you'll be able to find out where he's playing.
Right.
New York City has that immediacy factor.
I know you would also tell stories about when you would walk to school. I was very fascinated. If you just can just quickly talk about the adventures you had walking to school, how it forced you to become, you know, a strong human being because of what you would see on your walks to school.
My private school that I went to, I didn't want to go to private school, obviously, Nada, because my friends all went to public school. My mom was very conservative and very religious, so she put us in these religious schools. Mm-hmm. The problem with mine was it was in a racist Italian neighborhood. Now, I had Italians in the Bronx that I was totally cool with, so I was unprepared for that experience. When I went to see these Italian cats, I assumed they were like the Italian guys in my neighborhood, and they weren't. Mm-hmm. And then the part that made me very angry, honestly, was I was in second, third, fourth grade, but I had grown men chasing me. You know, I had 45-year-old guys chasing me, not guys 15 or 16 years old. So growing up in the hood, you're used to scrapping with guys that's at least a generation of yours or maybe one higher, but not somebody your dad's age.
Yeah.
That was tough. And then what made it more tough was watching the parents walk by and see that happening and not say anything. Because now in my neighborhood, we couldn't chase white guys around and beat them up.
Right.
Our parents would see that and say, you can't do that here.
Right, right.
They didn't allow it. Right. So it was a little culture shock for me on that level. And also it made me disappointed with the school because the school should have provided security for us if we're paying this tuition. So immediately my political game got put on like mm-hmm. second or third grade, immediately, mm-hmm. like boom. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, I laughed at Archie Bunker Show and these kind of TV shows, and I still love them to this day. But that experience was like a wake-up call for me. So the toughness was being able to be tough about it and not be afraid, but also to hold my ground. and not have it be something that could intimidate me or make me hate Italians or hate white people. It didn't do that to me because fortunately, I already had a understanding that even in our own cultures now, you got people that are just knuckleheads, and you have to. But you got to watch out for knuckleheads, because if you're not, if you can't suss them out, that experience could be expensive.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go to drumming now. In the drumming world, what would be one of your early influences that really like stunned you in your early life?
Outside of yourself?
Outside of myself.
Because when I first heard you play, it was stunning. I don't have to say this because you're on, but a massive fan of everything, the commercial work, and also you inspired us drummers to learn how to write songs, how to produce, how to sing, how to listen to the music, listen to everything, control, you know, drive the bus from the back seat. You know, I mean, those are the things that in my opinion, in your playing, because I would pick up records that you were on, but you composed songs or you produced tracks. You weren't just playing. And that gave me the idea, I got to get on the guitar. I'm after some things and I got to think about music.
Yeah.
And I think about the drumming in another different head. But first comes the music. Right. So I'm not going to embarrass you, but that's a fact and that's true. And I got to say that.
Okay,
as a listener, it would be Elvin Jones, because Elvin Jones captured the things that you just said when I went to see him. Mm-hmm. He was the heavyweight champion, and he was a ballet dancer. Mm-hmm. He hard swing, and he would smash the cymbals, as you know. But then when he played with brushes, it was the most romantic thing you could hear on a snare drum. Mm-hmm. So Elvin was the first kind of barometer for me to say, you got to get into the sensitivity, and you got to make it still swing, and you got to make it still, even though it's romantic, doesn't mean it slows down. Right. You got to keep it moving. You got to keep that motion. So Elvin was the first guy that I studied that. But I would say, you know, him, guys like yourself, and guys like Billy Cobham, drummers that were also doing more than just playing the drums. As profound as many guys are, I was into the producer, songwriter, making music with the drum set, making it sound, making it blend with a harp or with a tabla or with the orchestra, or with heavy distortion guitar, or with the light acoustic guitar. And those are the things that you and the guys of your generation, I think, set an amazing precedent for my generation to research and study.
Yeah, thank you. What about like a song like your Cult of Personality with your fantastic band, Living Color? So powerful, so trendsetting. To this day, man.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, those that record and that song, I think, encapsulates all of those things. It encapsulates yourself. It encapsulates John Bonham. It encapsulates Tony Williams.
Yeah.
You know, I made a salad.
Yeah.
You know, I made a drum salad out of that sound. A great drummer I studied with, Kenwood Dennard.
Yes.
You know, who taught me about moving time, making time sound like it can move, but you're not playing those notes. Like that introduction with the quarter note triplet with the bass drum is only to make the sound, the time not sure where you are, and then bam, in comes the riff.
Wow, I love that.
Yeah. So those are the things, man, that with Living Color, I wanted to have the same elements that you mentioned: sensitivity, power, driving the band, intricate things, obviously, that come from bebop, maybe even or some jazz and swing, but you know, also, man, yes, the fusion stuff, the rock stuff, the hip hop stuff, and the James Brown stuff.
Yeah, sure. I'm working with a guy now who's a massive fan of yours, and he talks about your feel. His name is Neil Sean. He plays guitar for Journey.
Oh, he
saw you play with your band, and what you were doing just captivated him. I mean, he talks about it. Cause he loves that feeling, you know. So I want you to know you have a lot of fans in the world, man. You have a lot of fans out here. Yeah, yeah.
Thank you, Nada. Thank you, brother.
And then what about,
and
for
the
example,
feel comes from your earlier question.
Oh.
Yep. Go ahead.
I was going to ask you someone that's touched both of our lives as far as playing, and I want you to speak about him. is my dear brother, your dear brother, T.M. Stevens, our great bass player brother. What do you want to say about T.M. Stevens?
Well, T.M.'s from the Bronx, too. So our frequencies identify with each other because we joke about the same pizza shops we used to go eat at, you know, some of the parks we used to play in. Yeah. But T.M., lovely brother, incredible musician. As you know, he did a lot of great work with you.
Yeah.
And a ferocious bass player, but also I've done sessions with T.M. where it's funny because you see T.M. and it looks like he's holding a weapon. And then at one of these songs in the studio was this real mellow song. And it was interesting to see T.M. take this ballad and play it like, you know, the opposite of his character, of how we're used to seeing him. Mm-hmm. So T.M. was a musician first.
Yeah.
Great master of the instrument, great influential bass player. I know at one time in New York, I used to hear T.M. Steve, that was a standard.
Yes.
You don't sound like T.M. You're not playing like T.M. You're not doing this like T.M. I mean, it was a time when T.M. was T.M. was the that was the standard. You had to, if you weren't on that, it was T.M. and below.
Yeah.
You know, no disrespect to anybody who was in New York that you and I both know, but great. Love him to bits. I still go see him as much as possible. Mm-hmm. He's on some recordings of mine I haven't released yet that I'm going to release soon.
Okay. Okay.
But lovely, lovely brother, and he definitely inspired me. Even when I was I have my moments when I was questioning about some things of Living Color, and I'm gonna say this too. You know, sometimes you got to have a go-to guy, a go-to. Mm-hmm. TM was also a brother I could call when I was feeling ambivalent about. I was like, you know, man, I don't know. And he would say, Cal, you gotta stick it out, brother. That's it's called mowing the lawn. You know, the grass is getting a bit high. You just gotta go out there and mow the lawn, man. There's nothing wrong. It's nothing wrong. You're making a big deal out of it. Go out there and mow the lawn, get the grass back at the height where you like it, and then get on with your day.
Wow.
So he was also helpful for me with times when I felt like I didn't have anybody to talk to personally about things because TM knew the people that I was talking about.
Yes.
Just the circumstances.
Yes.
And he was always very positive, never negative, and a beautiful cat.
I saw you in Japan with TM. I don't know where the club was now, but I was just floored by your power and your execution and your love that you showed TM in that club that night. It was packed, first of all. People came because they wanted to feel T's power with you. And I am telling you, you put it down. And I've been your fan
Thank you.
When I saw that, then I was really your fan. Okay, man.
Well,
okay.
Well, thank you, T.M. Thank you, man. Thank you, brother.
Yeah.
Thank you. But that was a beautiful thing, and I love his music. And he's a brother. I was in Australia one time. I was living in Australia for a little while, taking a break from the States, and I came back, and T.M. called me, and I said, "Man, how's it going?" And he said, "Man, I did a record, and I want you to play. I saved this one song for you." I said, "Sure, man." So I went up to play with Jason Cassaro, the late, great Jason Cassaro Engineering. And I'm playing a track. And TM took me outside. He goes, check this out, man. I'm going to need you to cut the whole record. I said, TM, I thought the record was done, man. He says, yeah, but some stuff's got drum machines, man. I mean, how much time do you have? And narrative, we did the whole record that day.
Oh, man. Okay.
Like that's the love I have for him and the honesty, and he just said, "Look, man, we'll go over it section by section." And there's actually it was fun, and with the late great Jason Cassaro engineering, you can't go wrong.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so one last question, and I know you want to play something for us. My last question is this: you're present to the future. What do you want to get into within these next, say, 2 to 3 years? What do you want to get into? And how can I be of service to you? What do you want to get into these next few years of your life that's going to be like your focus? What would you say that is?
Wow. Now that's a big question.
Okay.
I recorded a record in Mali.
I
talked to you about this briefly before. It's not mixed yet.
Okay.
It took 10 years to do, Narada. Okay. I did things like driving from Bamako to Timbuktu. Took about 5 days, flat tires, got lost a few times. But during that trip, I got a lot of sacred music, I hooked up with a lot of sacred musicians. I recorded with the Hunters, which is a blues 40,000-year-old and more culture. You got to hear this music. It's
okay.
The Hunters are people who feel your vibration. So people don't like them around because when you come around them, they can tell what you're about.
Okay.
They go on vibrations.
Okay.
So I was trying to play with them for years. And those cats, I visited this village 4 times a year for 4 years before I was allowed to get to music.
Wow.
So I got it. And there's a few things, and that music and that trip and that journey is a very big thing, a big part of what I want to get to next, because it has my childhood, Living Color, the jazz stuff, my trips, my journeys, my downtime. I feel like this, I arrived at a place now where, and in a space where this is the next thing that I think I want to get into, that's going to take me another 200 yards downfield, so to speak. You know what I mean?
Yes, yes.
Like it's a huge thing emotionally. Wedding beats for healthy pregnancies, beats for water, for rain. They're in the music. It's nothing you have to feel like is religious or sacred, but it's festive. It makes you feel good.
Yeah.
It makes the blood run better.
Yeah.
It makes your body vibrate in a more positive way. And that's the thing that I definitely would like to get to. And it's done. And you know, I might need your help because I just got over getting it all done. I played it for Peter Gabriel. I played it for a lot of different artists. And they all told me, don't put anyone on this recording. Mix it as it is. It's incredible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So depending on how things pan out, whether I can either send you some things or I can get out there, I want to get to that. I want you to hear it. There's some gorgeous vocalists on here now.
Okay.
Gorgeous singers.
Okay.
Tumani Diabate, the best choir player in the world. Tumani is on it. Uma Sangari is singing on it. You know, I got these really unbelievable young lady from Gawa. She's from the farthest east coast of Timbuktu. And she almost sounds Chinese. This music almost sounds like Chinese music. And it's North African music. It's incredible.
Okay.
So I combine all of these singers and all of these great musicians. And the only American Western musician I have on there is the late, great Bernie Worrell.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I got Bernie on one track. But basically, Nara, it's all Malian cats and a few Senegalese cats. But I feel like with what's happening right now with our vibration on this planet, you know, how, you know, a lot of information is negatively being stirred up. You know, we have a lot of division.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're acting out of knee-jerk reactions and not out of any kind of spiritual investment.
Yeah.
A lot of things that are happening are like vengeful, you know, hitbacks, and we're not looking at what happens when you throw that pebble in the water. You don't know how far those ripples are going to go out.
Exactly.
You know, so you got to be careful what stone you throw in and what size of the stone. And you got to be ready to know this is going to go out to Florida, this is going to go out to China, this is going to go out to Japan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to be ready for the repercussions. And so the positive energy, we're not concerned with that because we want it all to go out as far as possible.
Yes.
So the idea with this music is for me to toss a positive stone into the water, man, so the ripples can go out and reach people and remind us of our humanitarianism
first,
we get into the other things.
If we can help you do some mixing on it or whatever you might need, think about us, okay?
You know, always, brother, always.
Yeah.
And you always offered that to me.
Yeah.
And you definitely will hear from me for sure. I certainly will take that into consideration. Thank you.
And I hope you can get footage. This would be a great documentary, Netflix and all those you know, opportunities that are in the world now where we can watch and learn from an educational standpoint, because you're a great teacher.
Well, thank
you. You're a great teacher.
Thank you, Nada.
Yes, you are.
Thank
so
you, man.
So
thank
teach
you.
On, man. Teach
okay,
on.
Thank you. Well, I'm gonna call you for that as
okay.
well. I
mean,
I do have
okay.
some footage. I do have some secret things I want to show you. I want to show you this the grandfather of the reggae beat.
Okay.
And the person who showed it to me is the woman. This woman is the baddest drummer in the village.
Oh God. Okay.
And I want to show you this pattern she showed me. She sat on my kit and sat down and played it. And I was like, "Wah!" It's so killing, man. So when I come out and see you, I want to show you that, man. And you'll it's a faster pattern than reggae, but if you slow it down, you'll go, Oh, so it went from there, then went to Nigeria, and then, you know, went all the way to the States, stopped in the Caribbean, and it's a very heavy influence on One Drop and on Reggae Fields. But yes, I have some footage. I do want to put it together, man, and I'll be in touch with you and I. And thank you so much for that.
Hello, narrator. Thanks again. Peace through culture.
Thank you, Narda. That was awesome. Up next is Mike Dawson, Modern Drummer's Own MD's MD. Take it away, Mike.
What's up, everybody? This is Mike Dawson, managing editor for Modern Drummer, and this is the Shop Talk section of the podcast. And this week, I want to talk about the Big Fat Snare Drum mutes. If you haven't heard of these before, I definitely invite you to check them out. You can check them out on the website, but also I'm going to drop in some audio demos in this segment. So the Big Fat Snare Drum is basically a drum head without a collar and then a rubber plastic ring around the perimeter. So you just throw it on top of your snare drum and it instantly deadens it, drops the pitch, so you can get multiple, you know, sounds out of one drum. I've used these on tons of recordings, tours. They're really handy to have. So I wanted to highlight a few of the models here in case you're curious what the different models sound like. So the first one is what they call the Big Fat Snare Drum Original. So it's a solid head. You just throw it on top of your drum. So in this demo, I'm using the exact same drum on all of these. So it's a 5x14 Ludwig rocker kit, which has a steel shell. I die cast hoops on it. It's tuned really high. So you're hearing like a really high, bright, ringy snare drum for a measure. And then I'm going to throw the mute on. And it's four measures of the drum with no mute and then four measures of the drum with the mute. So you can hear I didn't change the tuning. I'm playing the exact same beat. I'm playing the exact same dynamics, same mics, everything. Minimal mixing. So you can just hear what the drum sounds like natural and then with the Big Fat Original. So let's throw that on and check it out. Cool, right? So that one, the original, I've used a lot on recordings, and surprisingly, it doesn't deaden the drum as much as I thought it would. There's still some overtones that poke through, so the drum still has a little bit of life, but it definitely lowers the pitch. I think of it as like an instant Steve Gadd sound from like the 70s. Any drum, you can turn it into a Steve Gadd sound. Word of caution, rim shots don't sound so good on it. And also, it does bring down the volume of the drum. So if you're playing live and you have a front of house engineer, they need to be aware they might need to boost the snare a little bit in the mix whenever you have this thing on, or you just use it for the whole show. And it's a great way to tame a really loud drum on stage. So anyway, let's go into the next one. So the next one is what they call Steve Donut. So it's the basically the original Big Fat Snare Drum with a center hole cut out of it. So you're actually striking the drum on the drum head surface, but there's the rest of the drum is covered with the mute. Let's check it out. Same drum, same groove, four bars without it, four bars with it. Pretty cool. Different sound, different vibe. Not quite as thuddy, maybe just a little tighter, more compressed sounding. This is the one that I use live the most often. I've toured with it. It's great for if you're just playing clubs, you know, one-offs and you have to deal with different room acoustics. It was awesome for touring in that capacity because it just kind of made the drum consistent, easy to control. I think in the 35 days of touring, I only had to tune the drum once to get rid of some overtones that were kind of competing with the room acoustics. So with this thing on the drum, it's kind of a fail-safe, gives you a nice tight focus sound. Plus having the hole in the middle, you can still get some rolls and some response out of it. It's pretty cool. That's my favorite one, Steve's Donut. Okay, here's a version of the Donut with some jingles in it. They call it the Snareburine. So this is the same as the Steve's Donut. So there's a hole in the middle, but there's also tambourine jingles riveted to the surface. This is more of a special effects sound. You'll hear the jingles rattle on every backbeat. They don't rattle like continuously, so you just get a nice tight jingle sound. So again, here's the drum with no muffling and then with the Snareburine mute. So that's obviously not something you would use on every song all the time for an entire gig, unless that was a very particular type of production that you're going for. I use it occasionally as an alternative sound, maybe on the side snare. It's also cool if you throw it on the floor tom for certain types of effects. It's just a cool alternative texture to have in your bag. All right, so let's move on to the last one. This was the one that surprised me the most. This is the Green Monster. So this is a thicker mute. So it looks like the original, except for instead of being made of like a thin drumhead material, it's like a thicker plastic. And it also has a little bit of texture, so you can get some kind of brush response out of it. This one surprised me with just how much it made the pitch drop. So check it out. This is the Green Monster. Pretty wild, right? So that's a sampling of all the Big Fat Snare, not all the Big Fat Snare Drum, just a few of the more popular models of Big Fat Snare Drum mutes, the original Steve's Donut, the Snarebarine, and then the Green Monster. Hopefully that gave you some ideas about maybe which way you want to go if you're going to order one of these things. They're all cool. They all are made very well. They're easy to carry. You can throw them in your cymbal bag or just throw them in your snare case on top of the drum. I always have them every gig just in case I need to deaden the drum for, you know, certain stages or if just the vibe needs to be slightly different. I always have them in my bag. So check them out, Big Fat Snare Drum. And that's it for this episode. So we'll see you next week. Have a good one.
Thank you, everybody, for watching this week's Modern Drummer Podcast. Stay tuned for next week's episode exclusively on Podcast One. Until then, stay safe and healthy, and thanks for listening and watching.